check it out. Un territory. Ain't nobody been there. You understand? Undiscovered. So call somebody and tell somebody. There's a new day, and there's also a new sheriff in the town. A lot of things will be exposed real soon. Love you. Be good.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to episode 160 of Uncharted Territory, probably 159 episodes more than we thought we would be doing. My name is Tim Dalton, and I will be your host this evening. I am also joined by the Filsinger Games Legends crew. Tonight, we've got some fun topics, some things to talk about, some new developments, a little bit of everything. But before we get into that, we'll go around the Zoom room and introduce ourselves to ourselves and give our AccuWeather forecasts as we always do here in Buffalo, New York. Pretty much average for the year right now. I think the average temp this time of year is 41 degrees, and it was 41 degrees today. So that's pretty average. Had a little some scattered showers, and it was a little breezy. We're actually looking to warm up by the weekend. By the time this drops, we will have temperatures in around 50. So there you go. Not a bad start to the wintry season here in Buffalo. But let's check some other places around the map here. Let's first go to Chad Olson in Iowa. Chad, how are you this evening?
Oh, Tim, I'm doing well. It's been a little breezy, a little chilly here, but not horrible. It was definitely colder the week of Thanksgiving. It's been in the low 20s in the morning and gets up to maybe mid-50s during the day. Doesn't look like we have much chance for precipitation, so it's just kind of hanging out, being windy as it tends to be in Iowa. But
that's
it. What warms my heart and my cockles is being here with all my friends.
Oh, there you go. And we like to keep your cockles warm.
I said cockles.
I know. Next up, Stu Lowry. What's it like in Virginia these days?
Cockles are warm. It's about 50, 52 today, something in that ballpark. Slightly above average for Virginia in December, but we've got a nice stretch of relatively mild days for December. We're even going to flirt with a 60 here and there, and then settle in for a stretch of 50s after that. So not bad for Virginia weather in December. A little rainy or a little cloudy and dreary yesterday and the day before, and some of that's going to linger, come back around on Wednesday. But for the most part, we did see the sun today, so that was good. And, you know, just kind of average weather here in Virginia. Looking forward to the discussion.
Fantastic. Corey Olson in Minnesota, how's it going?
Oh, you betcha. It's good, Tim. Thanks for asking. Weather in Minnesota, you know, mild by Minnesota December standards, in the 30s or so. Chilly, but not terrible. Not too windy right now. And we're actually supposed to get a mild heat wave as well, Tim, moving up to about the 40s by the end of the week, if the forecast is correct.
Sunbathing weather.
I know. We'll see. I don't know if I can handle that, but things are good. Our wrestling season is underway. We had two meets on Friday and Saturday, a duel or a try on Friday and a tournament Saturday. I'll talk a little bit more about that later, but yeah, off to a good start. And I too am excited to be here.
I love two meats.
Ah.
Like a two meat sampler and you go to a barbecue joint. Mm-hmm. Stuart, you know what I'm talking about? Down there in the south where you live? Off the holler?
Stuart's just looking for those half price hamburgers.
Yeah, that's true. He wouldn't spend for two
burger
meats.
Night is what I live for, brother.
There you go. You get the one meat platter. You're not springing.
I'm a one meter.
He gets out of money.
Two servings of one meat. There you go.
I'll take there's a no, double one meat.
You got
there's,
it.
There's nothing wrong with that either. Well, before we get into tonight's topic, as we usually do, we'll take a little glance at the Filsinger Games universe and see what new announcements have been made. First off, for the indie women's set that's coming out, Miss Reality Maddie Renkowski, a fine Irish girl. We see Polish women a lot here. It's a big Polish area here in Buffalo, so I'm glad to see somebody with a name like Renkowski getting a break in the business. I know nothing about her, but you know, as always, glad to have her in the game. Gentlemen, any knowledge? Corey, you usually have a little bit more than the rest of us.
I mean, this one I didn't really know, but shortly after the announcement, I'm listening to the Wrestling News podcast, and apparently I don't know if she signed a developmental deal with WWE, but she's going down to Orlando or is there now. So that's cool, really cool timing when they said her name. I'm like, hey, she's in our next Filsinger Games indie set. But that's about all I know. I have not seen any of her work yet, but as always, very excited to have her in the game.
Well, that's awesome. Mm-hmm. That's awesome. And as far as our Legends sets go, the Graham family, or part of the Graham family, that are actually related, which is unusual. Sure. Eddie Graham and Mike Graham were announced. I think Eddie Graham is just such a great get for the game. Just looking at his history as both a performer and then behind the scenes as a promoter and booker and everything else he did and what he did for the community down in Florida. And then Mike Graham, his son, very underrated in the ring, I thought. Just really good worker. Could kind of carry people and make them look great, which was what part of his career was about. But he main evented some too in his wrestling career. Gents, thoughts on Eddie and Mike?
I was just going to say I'm really, really excited to have Eddie Graham. When we got Mike Graham way back when, I was hoping we'd eventually get Eddie. I mean, as a wrestler, he fits a lot of roles. And I think he could definitely be a main eventer. I also think he could be good in some storylines. We certainly have good connections throughout the roster for Florida. So I was really excited to have this. Now, this obviously screams for us to one day somehow sign Dr. Jerry, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Baby steps. But Mike Graham, also great to have in color. For those who are doing a junior heavy division, he will be a nice addition, or just now you'll have him in color. So that much better.
There you go. Corey, what were you going to say?
I mean, I'll just kind of echo Sue's statements. Yeah, it's cool to have Eddie. You know, we had Mike. He was in one of the last black and white sets. And now these years later, we can re-release him along with his father. And props to Chad for getting Eddie signed. And but yeah, really cool. Tim did the stats for both Grahams, and I think he did a really good job. I think Eddie will be a fun card to use however you want to use him. And yeah, a lot of fun.
Chad?
Yeah, I reached out to Mike Graham's daughter and through Facebook and contacted her, and she was very supportive. I had shown her the picture of Mike's black and white card and, you know, explained how he had signed many years ago. And she said, yeah, thanks for remembering my grandfather. So we got her to sign the form, and Tim did a great job researching all the stats for both these guys. And I think it'll be a good tag team, but like Tim said, I mean, this is a main event guy right there with Eddie Graham, and Mike Graham will fit in well with your junior heavyweight division. Certainly some other folks out there in Legends Land he has some connections to, so it'll be fun to see him in action as well.
Yeah, and I when I did the work on the stats, I mean, I tried to take it from his time as kind of a Florida babyface where he was kind of the main event guy. I try to do that more because we don't have Jerry Graham signed. So I didn't really kind of go back and work on the Golden Grahams or anything like that, although I'm sure his style didn't change a whole hell of a lot. But it was kind of nice listening to Gordon Solie do some of the commentary for matches and things like that. So that was definitely a cool experience having Mike Graham and Eddie Graham in the game.
And to clarify, we don't have Billy Graham or Graham Nash or Kevin Nash.
Or Crazy Luke Graham. We don't have signed to the best of my knowledge.
Or Jerry Graham of the Jr. Other...
Yeah.
Who we met at CAC one year.
So yeah, so this is it pretty much for your Graham family needs. If this doesn't suit them all, then you know, find a bootleg somewhere, buddy.
Exactly.
And then also, in addition to the Phil Singer Games release, next week on this show, on this very show, right here, we will release the information on the characters that we created for one another. And that Grant Pachoco, a listener of ours, kind of challenged us to do. And I'll have to, I got on that right away and then kind of just let it idle because we were working on stats for the game. And so I've got to kind of get back into that. And then there was Thanksgiving and my travels and that. So, you know, we'll have to get back there and see what we can do. How's everything coming for you guys?
It's all up in my brain because I've also been working on sets and it's all, but I know what I'm going to do for Mr. Stewart. Now, did we talk about the classics Blood and Jammer, which were just announced a few minutes ago?
No, I didn't see those.
Didn't even see them. No,
I added them to the run sheet before we started, but it's late breaking news. I wish we had that noise. Corey, can you insert that noise like the newspaper ticker? So Blood and Jammer from the early classic set are coming to the classics 2074, 2075 set. I think that's what it's called. So yeah, they look tough.
Mm-hmm. I saw your note on the spreadsheet chatter on the run sheet, and I checked out their artwork. I think the artwork looks awesome. I think it's Jammer is the one with like the kind of doing the cross arm pose. He kind of reminds me of Taz or Polos.
What? No way. Mm-hmm. I don't see that at all. And this man is Blood.
Yes.
He's smoking a cigar and he has scars on his body. Reminds me of Steve Minskoff.
Many people say that about Steve Minskoff.
Mm-hmm. Stu, did you have this set? Did you use these guys?
Used them a little bit. I have the set. I have the black and white set. I use Blood and Jammer just a few matches. Didn't do much with them storyline wise. Didn't do much with them title wise. So I'm digging the art. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I think they look pretty cool. I never used them. We had the set, but I never used it. But I think they look like a couple of bad mama jammas.
They definitely do. Well, that's cool. I just thanks for seeing that, Chad. I completely missed that that they were revealed. So kind of cool to have them coming in as well. Tonight's main event, our topic. Before we do that, though, Chad Olson.
Guys, you got to look at the run sheet. It's getting updated up to the last minute. We have a listener question.
I bet I know the listener question at least.
I believe I know that as well.
So it is from TTX, the biggest upsets for your feds. Asking this because Kenny J cleanly best Nick Bockwinkel cleanly. It was a very clean win. After a mighty body slam and a sodbuster spike and a roll of snake net eyes. Certainly your dice are broken because there's no universe where Kenny J would beat Nick Bockwinkel, Mr. TTX. So I think you need to retire them and I will buy you some new dice. Biggest upsets in your fed. Feds. Promotions. Corey.
Okay. No, I mean, I'm assuming any Phil Singer Games line is fine. GWF, it's not just Legends.
It's only Sentra.
What about the 69 Mets and Stratomatic? Can I use that? No?
Yeah.
Okay. So this kind of ties in nicely to our topic tonight. Off the top of my head, the one I always remember when I get asked this question. In playing with the 79 and 86 classic set.
You get asked this question a lot in your life.
Yeah, actually. Yes.
You're just sitting at your desk.
No, I get asked on the discussion board or the or at Galacticons and things like that.
Or in the grocery store. There I was buying a rutabaga, and up the guy comes up to me and he says, "Hey, you're Corey Olson. What's the biggest upset you ever had in your Fed?
Who's your champion?
Who are your champions? What are you gonna do with that rutabaga?
None of your business, Smiley. Just let me and my rutabaga have some goddamn peace.
Leave my rutabaga alone.
Yeah.
Jackass.
You got a rutabaga bigot? Don't do that.
Okay.
Fuck.
I'll leave all that in.
Oh, yeah. That's good.
That'll be the longest Easter egg. No,
that's gold.
This will be one of those episodes that's, you know, a half hour long with a 3-hour Easter egg.
I'm not decorating. We're talking rutabagas right now.
Okay. There you go.
Chad has now brought rutabagas up on the screen here.
Look at that. Look at that nice throbbing rutabaga. It's purple.
It is a root vegetable.
It's a root vegetable.
It's also called Swede. As in Swede.
It
Hansen?
Is. I didn't know that.
It is
Swede
up.
Rutabaga Hansen.
Oh my God, there's an NGO character.
Actually was his middle name.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to tell you guys something. I was listening to last week's episode on my walk, and when I proofed it, I didn't catch this, but somebody talked about cross currents and how they look kind of gray. And I think it was Stuart. Was it Stu or you, Corey?
I said they were gray.
Stuart first. I'm like, you know, Stu's always complaining. What's he want, like a rainbow? And I'm like going, oh my God, next year, River Rumble, the rainbow trout. It'll be a flamboyant Ric Flair fish. Fans, you heard it here first.
These things write themselves.
Oh my God. I mean, really? Yeah, it is. It's pretty easy to make characters for this game. If you're not just popping them off like that, fans. Oh my God, look at this. This young man's eating a giant raw rutabaga. He's going to get worms from that shit.
He's very angry about it, too.
Yeah. Well, it's because
I hate my vegetables.
Somebody gave him a shitty haircut and he's making him eat a rutabaga.
That's true.
Oh, here's some mashed with sour cream and dill. That was good. Babe, fans, put your favorite rutabaga recipes in this week's discussion.
Right to the show. P.O. Box.
Look at this guy.
Or call us directly at BR549.
this young woman's got a giant rutabaga. She's quite
loser must eat rutabaga. Oh my God. Shitty haircut. It's a Mexican stip.
Corey. Oh, look at this book, Rudy the Rutabaga. A story about vegetables inclusion and seeing the sunny side of life. I love it. Here. Now this young woman is asking, is rutabaga the next big thing?
She looks fired up.
She looks like she's been fucking held hostage. What is wrong with her?
She's been sniffing
one too
rutabaga.
Many Xanax for her.
Yeah. One too many rutabagas. Rutabagas are actually a natural form of Xanax. Y'all may not know that, but they have some
actual. She's been mainlining them.
She just did a rail of fucking rutabagas. That's why her nose is purple.
Or if
and there we go.
That's holy. What are your biggest upsets?
Yeah. And that was the root anymore. Vegetable portion of our show.
I'm upset that I don't have a bowl of rutabaga right now, to be honest. Hold on. Here's the biggest upset in my Fed. This goes back to my GWF, and I've talked about this before, but Chaos took on Meteor Storm in a handicap match and got disqualified. So he's like, oh man, I'm so angry. I want to challenge him to a cage match. Now, when I made that challenge, I didn't really look at Meteor Storm's cards that much. But if you look, like, one of them has both into the ropes, into the turnbuckle, and choice A and choice B. So bingo bango, they turned fucking Chaos into a shredded head of cabbage or mashed rutabaga, whatever you prefer.
So, Corey, biggest upsets in your Fed that you've told 7 or 8 you know, people that just randomly walk up to you?
Yes.
Remember, you derailed us to start.
We got on this rutabaga shit.
No, let's see here. The one I always think of is, again, relating to our topic tonight and playing with the classic 79 and 86 sets. Dark Star Creature defeated Omega 2079.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And again, Dark Star not having any finisher or anything, and Omega having two finishers. Plus Omega having that one down and a pin of two. That's the big one I can remember. I know I've had others, you know. That's the biggest one I can remember. Talking about Kenny J, though, since Troy brought him up, I'm jumping ahead a little bit here in my discussion board posts. In my IPW, which has started, Kenny J, in the live from the Vault TV show, he battled the Big Picture, and he almost beat the Big Picture with the Sodbuster Spike. He hit the Sodbuster Spike several times, but Big Picture did hit his finisher in the end to win that. So that could have been a huge upset and kind of spoiled some things, but it didn't.
I could easily see Big Picture pinballing all over the place in an epic fashion for it.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
Well, Stu, how about you? What were some of the biggest upsets that you can remember off the top of your head here?
The one I remember that always springs to mind is also involves Chaos, his very first match. I fed him Ursa Major, thinking this thing's going to be over in about 3 minutes, and Ursa Major defeated Chaos. So, and this is the...
Chaos is a chump. You heard it here first.
He was. This is the original Ursa Major card, so it's a total bum. He beat Chaos and derailed things for a little bit. I had to build Chaos's record up a little bit after that. That's not an auspicious start, but I always...
You can't even
that.
Start at the bottom because he already did.
Oh, he did. And that's what springs to mind in thinking about this. So I know that there are some Legends upsets, but none of them are coming to my feeble head at the moment. But I'll find them. I'll find them later.
There you go. For me, I think, I know in my Legends Fed, I know SD Jones upset a bunch of people. I remember him beating Ivan Koloff 1 year. So SD had it, but he didn't have a totally terrible card, you know, and he was capable of doing that. But I mean, beating Ivan Koloff wasn't, you know, what I had planned. And in my GWF, I still remember, as I've said before, Mayhem was the best special matches wrestler in my Fed in the history. And, he was taking on Mutant, defending the special matches title. And I wanted to give him a match where I was pretty sure he was going to beat Mutant. So I put him in a torture chamber, and Mutant beat him 3 straight. And I just kept waiting for the comeback that never came. And Mutant just kept doing the temple grinder and all this other stuff. And it was just a hideous defeat for Mayhem, and probably not the banner moment in his career in my Fed for sure.
I did have, echoing your SD Jones, he beat Big John Studd in Big John Studd's first match. So, you know, when I feed these guys jobbers or pseudo jobbers, they lose. But that led to a fun feud in which eventually Big John Studd destroyed SD Jones, but he's got some staying power.
Corey?
What one relating to our upcoming color release, One Man Gang, when I brought in his black and white card, I think 2 or 3 matches into his time, got beat by Jim Powers. I'm like, oh, that's a tough one to come back from. And One Man Gang struggled for me with that original card a little bit. He didn't do as well as I thought, but I'll give him another shot at some point with his soon to be released color card.
Yeah. Well, that's good. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So we've had some crazy stuff happen, just like I'm sure a lot of people have. And if you want to throw those in the discussion board, as well, please feel free. But tonight's main event here, our big topic, we're going to go through the Classics 2084 and 2086 sets and kind of take a look at those and the different cards and characters that were involved in this. For some background, just in case you're not that familiar, we're going to go through these chronologically in GWF years, even though they were released in the opposite order. 2084 was released in 1997, and 2086 was released in 1993. For Classics 2084, I think the big story was the background on the whole Lord Nexus Invincible Kraken feud, the conflict between Titan and CTA 102 that wound up leading to the Galactic Wars, whatever the hell those were. And then in Classics 2086, which I loved the thing when I think when the promo stuff came out for this, it was called The Summer Before the Fall. And I just thought that was the greatest use of language that I had seen in Phil Singer Games history. Just fantastic. And it's kind of about the timeline from spring 2085 through winter 2087, although the story itself is set in the summer of, I believe, 85. So, Corey?
I just had a question that came to my mind. You know, I don't think we talked about this as much with the 74-79 discussion. And especially newer promoters who don't have these printed. You know, this was the first time cards were printed other than black and white. We had the blue and white.
Yeah.
And so, Chad and Tim, I just wanted your thoughts. What did you think when you first got these new cards, new layout, new look, just something totally different?
I was shocked.
I was appalled.
And how did you feel about a month later?
I was appalled.
I was shocked.
Okay, thank you.
I actually was so surprised, I fell through a table and bladed myself on the way down and bled all over mom's carpet.
Actually, that was a Christmas tradition at our house for many years.
No, I was like, wow. I mean, it was something. It was a taste of something different. It was
when you got the blue. It was, yeah. You know, it definitely kind of told you that something new and different was going on for sure. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And then we got the green cards with the
the bash sets.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but it was different. I didn't mind it. I mean, I thought it was a good way to kind of offset the cards from just the black and white ones that we you were using in your regular Fed. I thought it was kind of cool. Sure.
Cool. Okay. Just curious.
And just one thing before we get into it. I mean, I looked at this. I was going through the cards and the handbooks today. It's really hard for me to believe that it's the same artist that drew both of these sets, because you just see like a whole change in almost style from the 86 set that came out earlier to the 84 set. I mean, there's still the heavy use of like dark shading and stuff like that, but just a lot of that detail and things like that just kind of went away. And it was just kind of sad. I kind of liked the way that, that Brian Bendis, you know, kind of started things out. And then, by this Classics 84 set, wasn't as thrilled with his work.
Not at all.
Yeah, but still good stuff in both sets. And so, as I said, we'll talk about Classics 2084 first and go through some characters. Stu, why don't you talk to us a little bit about your favorite Mimic and the big superstar?
Well, Mimic's going to rank right up there with my least favorite characters ever. He's just a big blob of blue, like I was telling the guys before we started this show. That artwork is unimpressive. His story is interesting. He's one of the few characters who never said a word, competed for probably about 11 or 12 years. I'm not looking at the handbook right now, at the screen. But, you know, and as Tim said or indicated, he had a pretty decent card. I just never could get interested in the guy. So I didn't do a whole lot with him, and the artwork didn't grab me. Big Superstar was different. Now, in storyline, Big Superstar travels through time. He's obviously a parody of Hulk Hogan and loses some of his ability. So he doesn't necessarily compete favorably in the future and eventually just goes home after 1 year. But I remember being inspired. His name escapes me. There was a promoter who created a Fed and based it all around Big Superstar. And he did some enhanced stats for Big Superstar. And it was kind of cool, his take on it, to build a fantasy Fed or a futuristic Fed, if you want to call it that, around the Big Superstar. So I thought could have done a little more with the card, although I understood where he was coming from when he did the card to make a parody of Hogan. And people were sick of Hogan at the time. So it makes sense as to why it was done that way.
I would agree. I mean, I used Mimic when I did my restart for the GWF, because it said he stuck around in 87. So I used him a little bit, you know, I used him for a few months, and then, you know, they said he just went away. So I just stopped using him. But I didn't mind it. He's got a decent card. He's got the double finish. You know, the mime nerve sleeper. He's got good charts except for ring, where he's a C. His power is a +4, so that hurts him a little bit. But I thought a good card. I you know, just a kind of an interesting card overall. And yeah, Big Superstar definitely is not a Hulkster level card for the game. But it was a nice little parody that they did. Corey, what are your thoughts on these two?
I used Big Superstar in my AFW Fed. I can't remember how I tied him in exactly, as far as like, if I, you know, acknowledged that he was in the GWF in those days that I never actually played, because I didn't use the 2084 cards in my GWF, but I brought him in as this big deal. Like, people knew who he was, and for longtime promoters, and Chad and Tim, correct me, was it Andrew Karras? He had a bootleg character called Dagger Mac, who was just, I never quite understood what Dagger Mac was supposed to be. Just a goofy drawing, but I used him for years. He was my heavy metal champ in the GWF. He was just always around.
Well, it was an odd bit of artwork, but the card was okay.
Yeah. But yeah, I partnered up Big Superstar and Dagger Mac, with Dagger Mac sort of being Brutus Beefcake to Hogan, where he was just kind of this, you know, they were friends, and so wherever Superstar went, Mac was with him, and they were a tag team. They held the belts a few times, and you know, he was just kind of his run-in buddy. But I had Superstar later feud with Greg Valentine and King Kong Bundy, and Dagger Mac was part of that too. And I had a lot of fun with Superstar. It always cracked me up. I would say to people things like, well, you know, it'd be fun to have Hulk Hogan in the game, and they'd say, well, we do, and then talked about Superstar. And it's like, well, as Tim said, these are not Hulk Hogan stats. The Mimic was one I always wanted to use. I liked the drawing. You know, time-wise, it reminded me of Sting as the Crow Sting. Yeah. And I'm sure that was, you know, kind of an influence there. So that was one I always wanted to bring to my secondary Fed, but it didn't pan out. But yeah, cool drawing. But like Tim said, you know, you can kind of see some of the other artwork in the set not quite as strong as the 2086, which we'll talk about in a bit.
Chad?
So I used the Big Superstar in the CWA, and he wasn't that bad there because there wasn't a lot of super strong guys. And then I teamed him up with the Greg Valentine card, and they were managed by Raynard Beguile. And then when Bundy came out, they turned on Big Superstar, so Superstar was starting his big face run, and then I stopped playing. And I used Mimic in the CWA as well. And I mean, it was hard because, yeah, he had a cool drawing. You know, he looked like Sting, but his stat, well, I mean, you look at his picture, he kind of looks like he's in a Maalox commercial because of the way his torso was twisted around with his upper body, but he looks kind of jacked and he has a +4 power. So I don't know. He was kind of a, whatever character. I did like how he would try to mimic his opponent's offensive moves. I thought that was kind of a cool little thing. I liked both those guys. You know, Mimic didn't set my world on fire, but Big Superstar, I think him and Valentine might have had the CWA tag belts for a while. So they were kind of fun to use.
All right. Well, Corey, why don't you talk to us a little bit about Vice and Montrall?
I'd be happy to. So Montrall was, you know, Kraken's running buddy here, and I never used this card. This ended up being Mutant, correct? I'm remembering this correctly. No, okay, I'm gonna start that over.
No. Hey, let's talk about this because in Urban Legend, I thought that kind of might have been a thing too. Is that just something?
Everybody thought it was Mutant,
right?
But okay, it ended up not being Mutant.
Just because he got taught the Temple Grinder and that was his move on the card.
So that's, okay. You know, like we talked about at our last classic show, how sometimes things built up and paid off in later current timeline angles. Right. So everybody thought it was Mutant and ended up being, no, it wasn't Mutant.
Okay. Gotcha.
I don't think so.
Okay. Promoters, correct us if we're wrong, but you know, obviously there's hints, like Tim said, there's a Temple Grinder on Montrell's card. And just, you know, a few things that could make you think it was Mutant eventually. But no, he's just, you know, kind of not a strong card overall. Definitely more of a tag guy, and for Commander Kraken in this set, a good counterpart to him. Vice was a card that I did use quite a bit, actually, in my AFW. I brought him in with, because I had brought back Sin and Salvation. You know, I used them in my original GWF as kind of the tie into the 86 storyline. But obviously I wouldn't have had Vice to do that with, but when this card came out, I brought him in, along with Sin and Salvation. I really liked this card. He was just a fun character. You know, drawing wasn't great, but this was a very competitive character. I kind of saw him as kind of a cruiserweight, and I used him in that role, but kind of a brawling cruiserweight. And, I really liked him. Eventually, you know, I know it kind of defeated the purpose of the storyline with Polarity, but I used him on his own, apart from Sin and Salvation, where they, you know, kind of stuck more to their roots and said, well, there's too much divisiveness with him here, so we're gone. They left the Fed, but Vice stuck around and wrestled on his own for a while. I think I might have teamed him up with somebody too, but he was a great character. I really liked how competitive he was. He got some big wins here and there.
Yeah, for 84, I mean, his stats are pretty good. The pin of 5-2, he's got a plus two finish, which is still, you know, a big deal then. Cage pin of 1.
I was just going to say, I noticed that, and I'm wondering, you know, if we go chronologically, that might, if he was like one of the first guys with the cage of 1.
Yeah, could be.
I'd have to look. But yeah, really great, really really fun card. I really like this card a lot.
Chad, did you use these guys?
I did. Well, I didn't use Montreal. But I used Vice. I brought him into the CWA. I actually teamed him up with K.O. Keller from this set, although K.O. Keller was actually his nephew, K.A. for Kick-Ass Keller. So I had K.A. Keller and Vice, and they were like a wild-ass brawling tag team, so they were a lot of fun. You know, I loved Polarity, so I didn't want to split up them or, you know, the whole, I love, you know, the Gang of Three storyline that Tom introduces in this, but I think Sin and Vice would have been a really fun tag team too.
Yeah, it would have kind of gone against their whole gimmick, you know, of having the good guy.
I had too much respect for the gimmick of Polarity. No, I'm serious. I love that. That Polarity gimmick is awesome.
Yeah, it is. It is.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
It is. Stu, what are your thoughts on these two?
Didn't use Montreal. Used Vice quite a bit. Vice to me was just a total brawler. Didn't he have the finisher where he throws the guy out of the ring or something along those lines? I can't remember exactly.
Who?
Vice?
No, it says it's a series of knees to the head.
Oh, well, what do I know? But anyway, he was a fun brawler. It was a good card. The drawing, yeah, not so much. It was the headshot with the black and white hair. But I thought he was a lot of fun to use. Didn't do a whole lot title wise, but I definitely used him in some feuds over the years and as an annoyance to the heroes. So really liked the character, and didn't Mr. Everything based on him? Not Mr. Everything, Mr. Centra. Isn't he based on Vice in Mike's sets? I think he might be.
What? No.
I think he
isn't
might
that, be. Isn't that Vector One?
Yes.
Well, Vector One.
Okay.
Sorry.
They both start with V's.
That's so close.
I could totally see that.
They're all related. Yeah.
They're based on him. He likes Rutabaga.
That joke is so 10 minutes ago.
Oh, my God. I did use both. I used a lot of the classics cards and just unsanctioned shows and just kind of did them to do them. I just hated that Montreal drawing. That's up there with one of the worst drawings in history. It's just god awful. And I remember Vice looking too cartoony for me, but he performed okay. I remember that. I mean, he had good stats. He was just a, you know, well-balanced card. But yeah, he probably had one of the better gimmicks, and I mean the drawing though didn't quite do him justice. Not justice the wrestler or Dark Justice, but just Justice in general.
Or Sid Justice.
Maybe you could have teamed Justice and Vice as a new version of Polarity.
Oh, there you go. See the things that you can do is just write these all down in a book somewhere. So, you know, when you retire, you can sit there and just have all this kind of fun.
Oh, I don't know what you're talking about.
But Chad, you're up next here talking about K.O. Keller and the Code Enforcer.
Well, as I mentioned, I did use K.O. Keller as a different character, a relative, and he had a pretty good card, pretty strong card, and I liked his look. It was kind of basic, but out of this set, it was actually kind of one of the better drawings. For the Code Enforcer, I thought this was a really cool character and just the whole story behind him, you know, why Omega brought him in to address the enforcement of the Galaxian Code.
Did he really?
Dun dun dun.
You know, I mean, that was the whole thing. I mean, at this point, I mean, people were saying, well, you know, I mean, he denied any involvement with Omega or Morpheus, because there were some people thinking it was Morpheus too.
Right.
Yeah, I thought K.O. Keller was a cool character. The Code Enforcer has some kick-ass defense on him. If you look at it, I mean, he's got three reversals and all dazed on level 1. Level two is a couple of reversals, two dazed and two hurt. And then he's only got one down on level three defense. So, I mean, he's going to be tough to get to. And he's got the plus three finish, too. So forget the fact that it looks like he doesn't have a nose, which could be possible, with a mask. But pretty cool character, though, in the story. I think it was kind of neat, too, because he came in like a year before they broke the code, right? So he would have come in.
Well, it says here, the strange part is Omega officially wrote the code in 85, but the code enforcer began wrestling a year earlier.
Dun, 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 dun. So who was he? Who knows? Yeah, he might be related to somebody down the road.
Yeah. Then later in the GWF, they brought in a couple of code enforcers. And, you know, of course, the NGO had the greatest code enforcer of all.
And we were thinking about doing a second one, too, but just never got around to it.
Oh, it'll happen now.
Yeah.
We got an artist.
Do we? Yeah. There you go. Corey.
Yeah, I love the code enforcer too. Just I like that, you know, he's just kind of a general masked guy, but you know, he's protecting the code, or supposed to be protecting the code. And yeah, I had forgotten how tough his stats were too until I just kind of looked at him here for the show. Obviously, never really used him just because he didn't really make sense in my time frame and timeline to use him. But I really wish I would have had this set first, or you know, all the three, or all, I guess all four, to really do the full backstory of the GWF. And Cale Keller, yeah, another great card. Not one that I got to use either, but definitely tough stats, especially for this time frame. And if you're just using classics guys, he could very well grab your belt. Got a pin of one and minus one agility and power. Definitely very competitive card.
Stu, what use did you get out of these guys?
Not a whole lot with Code Enforcer, a ton with KO Keller. He has been in a stable with Morpheus and Mighty Grogan for me for quite some time. He has definitely won my world title. He is a tough out. He has had a feud with Omega for many, many years, and he is a heel, most assuredly, in my Fed. He's kind of a Terry Funk type. It's kind of the way I envision him, at least, and I've had a lot of fun with KO Keller. I think he's in my top 10 all-time characters on the champion side. I just think he was a fantastic creation.
I mean, he's no Paul Jones, but he's pretty damn good.
A few are. But you are correct. But he ain't bad.
Yeah, he was one of those like grizzled veterans, and I mean, you could just write storylines for this guy all over the place because he just seemed to fit in so many different things. Well, next we've got kind of the headliners of this set that kind of dealt, as I said, with the whole feud and the conflict with Titan and CTA 104 or 102. Now 104. You don't want to go to CTA 104. That place is a dump. But Lord Nexus and Commander Kraken. Another bad drawing for Kraken. And an interesting drawing for Nexus that I just don't know how that one got past quality control.
They're awful.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, Nexus didn't have the two Titan drops. He only had one. He had a single zero, just a single zero finisher on number six. Was a C out of the ring. And Kraken kind of was he didn't have his falling face slam yet. He was doing something called military maneuvers, which I believe was just like a running power slam. But it was a plus one, so he was passable. And had some decent stats. Nothing great, nothing to write home about. I guess, you know, the big thing with this was really just kind of getting out these early versions of these guys and then kind of telling the whole backstory of the conflict that made them, you know, bitter enemies for God, a million years now, you know? I thought that was pretty kind of a cool idea to do that. I think, it was something that the fans really wanted to know. It's like, hey, tell us more about this whole, you know, feud and the war that started this whole thing. So Chad, what do you remember about these cards?
It was really cool to get the story behind them and see how this feud came to the GWF. Unfortunately, the artwork did not support the story and the magnitude that this feud deserved. Now I will say, like Kraken's drawing, you know, it bleeds into Montrell's, And if Kraken wasn't supposed to be this badass guy and they were just a goofy little tag team, it would have been fine. But he's like the freaking invincible Kraken, and he looks like a goober, and the freaking rocket thing he has behind him looks like something he bought, you know, through fucking Acme with Wile E. Coyote or something. And that Nexus drawing is not cool. I'll just leave it at that. But yeah, like I said, it was really cool to see how these guys got their starts in the Fed. And, you know, talk about Nexus teaming with K.O. Keller when he came in to battle Montreal in Harakan. And, you know, it talked about in here Dragon Fighter, later to become Pit Viper and Dragon Master. And it's, you know, we never got that official one, but he's in the early classic set. So I'm assuming during the classics set, you know, these expansions at some time, we'll get that Dragon Fighter card.
That would be really cool.
Yeah, and you know what? Hopefully Daryl Banks keeps drawing all these sets so he can rectify some of this artwork. Because, I mean, you read the discussion boards, you read all the stuff going on, people are really excited for this stuff.
I would agree. I would definitely agree. Corey, what did you think of Nexus in the Commander Kraken?
I'll echo the statement, terrible artwork. Just so, yeah, I mean, like Chad said, Kraken wouldn't be so bad if he weren't Kraken. If he were somebody else, he's almost like he reminds me of like a manager, almost like a, like the collector or somebody like that. Just kind of a goofy little character.
It's not as bad as when they put him in the washing machine, but it's pretty close.
No, but it's pretty close. I mean, I think he's got the washing machine on his back there or something. I was looking at the drawing. I thought it was a keg or something like that. He's going to a kegger, but
no, it's a rocket.
I see that now, but I didn't see the whole thing there. So, and you know, I mean, I think the stats are good as far as like for this point in their careers. You know, it's kind of like early in their wrestling careers, and they're still, again, among this classics group, pretty competitive, or at least definitely competitive with each other, but not as strong as they would later become. But yeah, you know, like the stats, not so much a fan of the artwork.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much unanimous. I mean, Stu, what did you ever have these guys kind of face off against one another in at this time period?
Not with those cards. Those cards were terrible. But the other thing too is that I love the drawings, and still do, of the original Lord Nexus and Kraken drawings. I mean,
oh yeah,
you get these drawings and you're like, huh? The storyline was great. The flesh out some. I thought that was really well done. It just kind of landed with a thud with the drawings here. So no, I didn't do much with these cards at all.
Yeah, I didn't do much myself, to be honest. So that kind of wraps up the Classics 2084 set. Overall, I thought, you know, story was kind of interesting. It was great that they, you know, like I said, Tom kind of heard the outcry from the people, and it's all about pleasing the people. And you know, he kind of delved in and kind of dropped the backstory on this whole thing, and then added some other characters to kind of flesh it out, which I thought was great. And then we'll move to 2086, which, as I said, came out 4 years earlier in 1993. Really kind of highlighted that whole time period of upheaval in the GWF. And first people that we're going to talk about are two that would become feuding partners down the road for sure. Wolf and Marcel Desaad. Corey, tell us about these two.
Well, as I've said, I use this set, and this is my introduction to the game. So I remember using these two quite a bit. Wolf, you know, obviously not as strong as he would be in the 2087 set, but again, among this group, still very competitive. Had the Decapitator as his finisher, and have the Savage Face Claws in add one. And a little game history note for those that don't know or don't remember, this was only the second add one move in the history of the game. The first, of course, being Vengeance and the Eye Cleaver. But by this point, this was the only other one Tom had done. So really cool. And again, in this group or universe, whatever you want to call it, among these other classics cards, this gave him a big advantage. He would just rack up tokens on guys, and it was a really cool feature to have.
Yeah, and it's an add one on level two, number six, right? It's not on level three, so you're going to roll it more often too.
Yep, exactly. Yeah, so far that's, you know, where Tom had put it, just number six. You know, he hadn't moved it anywhere else up at this point. I think this card might have won my Galaxian title. I can't remember for sure. But I do remember that, you know, Chad loaned me Brute and Massacre cards before I had the full 2087 set so that I could have these three together, actually together as a unit before bringing in the full 2087 set. And that was a cool, you know, I kind of used them as a Freebirds team at times. Eventually, Brute Massacre were more the tag guys. But I loved using these three together. And I'd forgotten until reviewing this set that the artwork for the handbook was original Brute and Massacre drawings along with Wolf. And that's a really, really cool drawing. So I really, really cool to see that. Marcel Desade, Executioner before he was masked. And I like the storyline that Tom put in there, that the part of the reason he donned the mask was to kind of protect himself from the Savage Face Claws. Wolf started to use that as the finisher. Just thought that was a cool touch. But this was a good card. He had a plus two finisher. And again, among this crowd was pretty competitive. Just a little bit weaker than what he would become as Executioner, but not by much. And I kind of
He didn't have those three agility reversals that killed him. In the original set.
Yep. But I like that he wasn't, you know, drastically weaker, just a little bit. Again, you know, this is only a year before the original set in the storyline. So I kind of like that he wasn't drastically weaker. Two very fun cards, match them up against each other a lot. And they had some fun matches.
And I think it's kind of cool too that they said one of the reasons Wolf was weaker is that the gladiators were kind of exerting their influence on him to use mm-hmm. gladiator type moves like the gladiator pile driver and the decapitator, which we obviously know are pretty much on every card of the gladiators, and are kind of their signature things. Chad, what did you think of Wolf and Marcel?
I thought these were great. Great cards. I mean, first I want to talk about the book, because I just love that timeline in the book that talks about the whole breaking of the Galaxian Code, everything that led up to it, and then everything that occurred after. Because it, for those of us who've been there since the beginning, it really filled in a lot of that timeline. So, you know, it was just super to have. You know, one reason that Executioner or soon-to-be Executioner might have also donned the mask is to protect his pupils, because he's only of one of two drawings in this whole set to have pupils in their eye. Everybody else has these crazy white shaded eyes, no eyes. That must have been all the rage in a young Brian Michael Bendis's mind or something, because...
Or at least they have just like little dots for pupils.
Yeah, I have something.
Like, but Renegade, I mean, Renegade's got that too, but it's just little tiny dots.
Yeah. I'm counting Marcel and who else? Somebody else has pupils. Mighty Grogan. Yeah.
We can't tell if Natural Man did, because he's shaded over, so.
Yeah, it's hard to say. But I like the drawing on the cover of the book too, with all three of the gliders. It's cool. Although Brute, like, should be taller. And he looks like about the shortest one in the whole perspective thing. Maybe he's sitting on a chair and he's just that tall.
Yeah.
It's kind of like a family photo where you all gather him around the chair. But I really like Marcel Desade. I can't remember if I brought him into the CWA and had him wrestle like that after he kind of retired from the GWF. He did later manage a team of... I took the Executioner card and Whiplash cards, and when Marcel Desade became a manager, had him manage that team as the Sons of Desade in the CWA. But I don't remember if I ever actually used this Marcel Desade card, or if by that point I'm like, nah, he's too old, and I used his manager card. But I thought this was just great storytelling from Tom.
I would agree. Stu?
Liked both drawings. Desade, I never did a whole lot with. I'm sure I was tempted to use him as a different character at some particular point, but never did a whole lot with him, but I think the drawing is relatively strong. Wolf, cool drawing. I wish I'd been around when you guys had started, because I too would have been way into this particular set for all the storyline holes that it filled in. I think it was just really well done. The whole storyline was great. I didn't do a whole lot with the 2086 set, with the exception of a team we're going to mention here in a little bit who became an all-time favorite. But in 2086 in general, I just kind of appreciated the storyline that was filled in with this particular set versus using the characters all that much.
Yeah, no, I think it was really cool to kind of see earlier versions of these two guys that would be wind up just tearing the, you know, beating the crap out of each other in a few years. I like Marcel Desade a lot. I don't think I use the card much other than maybe as a match with Wolf at some point. Just like I said, some off the books dice rolling that I did just when I got these sets. But pretty cool stuff. Next up on the list, we have a tag team that I just really kind of found interesting and thought this whole kind of development of these guys was kind of cool. The Natural Man and Renegade, not the Nature Boy. He's the Natural Man. Stu, you want to talk about them to us?
A name that I like so much, I stole it from one of my characters I created in the GWFZ, the Natural Man, Bobby Roberts. But
you mean Robert Roberts?
Yeah, that the same one, the man with the name so nice they named him twice. In any event, really liked the Natural Man story and how he, before he was Vanity, he was just this health nut. Basically who tried to live of the earth, so to speak, watched his diet and was very health conscientious and conscientious of his health. And I thought it was an interesting story that guy morphs into Vanity.
Killer Queen took him out and got him laid, and all of a sudden that changed his whole life. And he was like, man, I could do so much more.
It's like on The Simpsons when Barney drinks his first beer. He's very, very intelligent, everything. He drinks his first beer and all of a sudden, just unravels.
So there you have it. Renegade is a character I've always liked. I love him most as Cannibal. In this particular rendition was fine. I like the two as the space groppers with the, I guess Beast Rider was their manager, so to speak. I thought that was an interesting concept. Again, didn't use them a whole lot. I more got the set to fill in gaps on the storyline, and I thought that was well done because I remember liking the Natural Man to Vanity progression.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. I thought the progression of these guys was kind of cool, and how Vanity was kind of corrupted and kind of turned away from his natural roots. Corey, what did you think about these two?
I mean, yeah, definitely made use of them in my first few months. I looking at the stats again after many years, I'm amazed they ever did anything for me as far as wins and such. Because again, I think I mentioned this on the last Classics episode, I did not use the choice charts. So you look at their level two offense, especially, they both have weak level two offense. But again, with this batch, they're bound to get a win here or there, especially like, their kind of their main feud was against Polarity. But, if they battle the alien, Tantalus and Parsec,
historians,
thank you. Then then they can probably get a win here and there. I'm pretty sure they did help hold the tag titles at least once. And they battled, had some good matches all around. I like Renegade's artwork as far as, it's kind of reminiscent of his 2087, where he's kind of doing the pose, even though he wasn't doing the camel clutch finisher yet, the spine cracker. It's kind of a similar pose. And so I like that. Stu mentioned liking Cannibal, and I liked Cannibal too, but I think I like the 2087 Renegade the best out of all his different personas or whatever you want to call it. I forgot how high Natural Man's pin was. fun.
It's funny because Renegade did have the camel clutch on the card.
Right.
And although you can't really see what he's wearing for gear, I mean, because he always had those like lightning bolt type things right. On his tights, and you can't quite tell if he's got that working here or not. But yeah, but still kind of a neat drawing of a guy that was kind of crazed.
Yeah, and they it seems like they kind of have matching outfits, or it seems like that was Bendis' intent to kind of give them a similar tag team look.
Suspenders.
Mm-hmm.
Like yep. The Fabs.
Yep. Yep.
There you go. All they needed were the bow ties. There
can
you
go. Say, it's a very fabulous one's look.
that's what led Vanity down that path.
Well, there you go. You know, once you go suspenders, you don't go back. Chad, what did you think of these two?
Yeah, the natural man thing, I'm like, oh, well, that's kind of a leap. I mean, it's kind of cool for the storyline, but yeah, the fact that he was a earthy, crunchy granola hippie or whatever, and then all of a sudden he goes, wah, and I'm Vanity. And I did like Renegade's drawing, and I think his lack of eyeballs, those little tiny dots, makes him look crazier, and especially the flex he's throwing. But Renegade's not so big a picture wearing suspenders either. So, but it was a cool story. It was neat to see how he, you know, because like, you know, I think when you get the original set, it talks about Renegade and Vanity were partners. It's like, okay, well, that's kind of weird. Why is this guy named Vanity teaming with Renegade? But it's like fleshing all this stuff out. It's pretty cool.
Yeah. Again, adding more depth and backstory to the whole thing.
Yep.
I mean, I liked it a lot. I mean, still any drawing of Renegade, he doesn't look like a guy with a zero or positive power at all. He always looks like he's a minus something in power. But you know, I can live with that. I mean, I thought most of his incarnations were pretty darn good as far as the artwork went. Next up, I think a fave here of the people on the show, Polarity, Salvation and Sin, from a planet that loves the duality of the good and the evil, or the tall and the short. I don't know how they really work this, but basically,
the
yin and
the yang, baby.
There's some yin, there's some yang. It's all in there. It's like Prego spaghetti sauce. It's in there. But, you know, so now you've got a guy, Salvation, who's just this ultra, you know, play by the rules, babyface type character, teaming with Sin, who's like the ultimate bad guy at this point. And, you know, his card is very dark. I just thought this was just such a great gimmick. Just such a great gimmick. I really liked it. You know, Salvation was such a good guy. He wouldn't attempt pin saves. So I remember trying to keep him out of the ring if things were starting to go bad. I would try to get him in the ring if things were going bad, because if somebody was going to need a pin save, you know, Sin had to be the one to do it. I just thought it was such a weird idea to have, like, you know, the ultimate good guy who wouldn't break the rules if, you know, you put a gun to his head, against Sin, who wouldn't, you know, throw on an arm lock if you put a gun to his head. I mean, it's just a neat idea. I did use them a bit. I think I may have brought him into my GWF just because I wanted to. I wanted to get some use out of this because I really liked the idea of it. And they were good. I mean, they were tough, but they were beatable. Especially because I brought him in later on, so there were some stronger cards down the road. But I think in this era, if you're looking at the early sets, I mean, they would have fit in and been pretty tough. I do like they said that Salvation's figure eight roll up is an Olympic finisher, which I believe is what Kurt Angle used to win the gold medal. Perhaps not, but I just found that interesting that, you know, that they would bring something up like that. And then Sin's finish is disguised brass knucks, where he just pounds a guy.
Flesh colored brass knucks.
Flesh colored brass knucks. You gotta like that. So I mean, you know, you can't get much better than that, can you? Chad, what did you think? I know you use these guys a lot.
Yeah, I use them in the CWA, and they had a great feud with the Historians. Feuded a little bit with Armageddon. They held my tag titles there. Salvation was a junior heavyweight championship champion before it became the cruiserweight title. I loved these guys. I used them a lot. And I mean, you look at Salvation, he's got 9 defensive tags.
Yeah.
I mean, that's got to be the record, I think. don't know. There's probably a card out there as more, and somebody will tell us. But I that's a lot of defensive tags.
It is. He doesn't have a lot of reversals, though.
No.
But
no.
But in a tag match, he's going to be able to get out of there if he needs to.
Right. Right. And I mean, you know, his level three, he's got three downs.
Yeah.
And, but yeah, these guys were tough. They would have been, if they had stuck around, they would have been really tough back in the day. And I like how it's like, you know, when they decided, when it's split into hero versus villain camps, they didn't know where to go. So they left. I mean, it was kind of a cool way to write him out, because it was a really good thing. But I do kind of giggle also. But the Olympic style finish, I'm like, not really. But oh well, it was fun. I like the move. I like the rolling cradle into the bridge. So not in any Olympics I've ever watched, and I've watched a lot more Olympic wrestling than most. You know, one thing I do want to say too, when we're talking about like the hero and villain camp, I think it's kind of interesting that Marcel de Sade was feuding with Wolf when both were really leaning towards the villain. You know, there's not going to be anybody in each cheers. That was a cool thing about the GWF back in those days.
Yeah. Yeah, you're right. You're right. Stu, what are your thoughts on Polarity?
Loved it. Loved him as soon as I saw him. One of my all-time favorite tag teams. Tom hit it out of the park with this. I love the concept. You know, Sin makes a fun singles wrestler, too. He can just, if you want some good brawls and blood and guts and everything, Sin will fit the bill on that. He is a lot of fun to use as a singles wrestler, as his salvation for a different standpoint, just to have a classic babyface wrestler in there. Yeah, and I agree. I thought it was clever how that Tom wrote him out. But everybody stays active in my Fed, but I thought that story was so well done, so very creative. They immediately captured my imagination when I saw him. This is a fantastic tag team.
And you finally find out what happened, how Thanatos got the scar, because you're getting, exactly. If you're fighting Sin, you got to watch out for that concealed ice pick. You never know when that's coming.
Yep.
Corey, what did you think of these guys?
Love these guys. I mean, they're the start of my Fed. Sin, my first GWF Galaxian champion, won the tournament and beat Morpheus in the finals. We did a cage match finals just to kind of make sure there was a winner. And having that +3 finish, that knuckle sandwich, that gave him a big edge among this group of cards. You know, and he's got the DQ of 7, which we don't really see anymore. But that was, you know, that fit him and his style. And I love that Salvation's got the DQ of 2. Yeah, really, I love these guys as a tag team. I once did an angle where, like, they were injuring, I think it was Wolf. They were kind of feuding with the Gladiators, and, you know, on the original feud table, it said like your ally comes in, and well, Sin's got one ally, and Salvation didn't want to help him, but he's like, you got to do your part, you know, that's how we work together. So Salvation reluctantly helped injure Wolf. But yeah, I always like the figure eight roll up too. Yeah, definitely not an Olympic move, but it always pictured a big bridge like Bob Backlund, and given Salvation's style, that I thought that was a cool touch. Yeah, these guys had Reigns as my tag team champions too, and I did bring them into my AFW after sudden death, and pretty much just to kind of introduce Vice, as I mentioned earlier, before they eventually kind of left him on his own. But yeah, love these guys, and I'd kind of forgotten, not having seen the artwork for a while, that they each had the P symbol for Polarity. Salvation had it on his singlet, and then Sin is like a tattoo on his arm, so I always thought that was really cool.
Yeah, I think they were my favorite. When I first saw those, I was like, holy crap, these guys are great. And just the whole concept, and that just everything just made it. I mean, just the look of the cards too, because you could see Sin being like this nasty, rule-breaking badass, and then Salvation, just this guy doing the flex, doing the single bicep, you know, with smiling, you know, with the long hair, and he's like the, you know, he's looking like Kerry Von Erich or something, and you know, teaming up with the sadistic guy from Pleiades. So just really cool stuff. I figured that would be the hit of the set for everybody. And last but not least, Chad, talk to us a little bit about Mighty Grogan and Tom going in a bit of a different direction on from his original concept for the Dark Star creature into what we got as the Dark Star creature.
Sure. So we got Mighty Grogan, who was a, he was kind of a veteran, I think, at this point. And he, I don't know, he reminded me of like a Nikita Koloff type guy. He's a big, burly dude. And he teamed sometimes with Sam and Omega. And he liked to battle the kind of discombobulated Dark Star creature who had, I don't know, I think he had kind of a funny funny setup on his offense where it's like, you know, something like a headlock, started out a neck breaker, blah, blah, blah. He had three out of the rings, no death jump, pretty strong defense with, 10 reversals on it, and but a very high pin of 11-8. Once you got the guy down, he was a bit kerfluffled and easy to pin. I did use the Mighty Grogan in the CWA, and I used Dark Star creature there as well. It is kind of funny that Dark Star creature, you know, Tom didn't use him originally, he said, because he thought that his name implied some kind of intelligence. And then he came back and made this version who was anything but intelligence and looked kind of like a crocodile and a pterodactyl had a sex baby. We got a different take on the Dark Star creature later in one of the GWFZ sets that Thomas Keene did for his friend Dave Simonak, who made a bootleg that was kind of a pretty famous bootleg on the scene of Dark Star creature early on in the game's history. And then, you know, Grogan, again, this was one of those angles where things paid off later when Mighty Grogan came back as the commissioner of, was he the GWF? And then he turned to the CPC, I think. Yeah. So good stuff.
I would agree. I mean, I remember seeing that original artwork for the Dark Star creature, which I wound up using for my GWFZ character. And Werner kind of, you know, put his own spin on it, but the whole head, I just thought was kind of unique. And Tom was supposedly thinking he was like this super intelligent, guy, and that was going to be a gimmick, but he just couldn't figure out how to quite work it. And so then we went total 180 and came up with this. Stu, what did you, if any, what did you use? Did you get out of these two?
Dark Star creature, I used hardly ever. I used the GW. Did you do the character in the GWFZ, Tim? Was that you?
Which one? No, I didn't do the Dark Star creature. I did a guy named Tiro, who was based on the original drawing that we got at one of the Galacticons for the Dark Star creature.
Ah, gotcha. In any event, no, I didn't use a Dark Star creature. I've used Mighty Grogan a lot. He has been a world champion for me. I love that character for whatever reason. As soon as I saw the artwork, I was like, yeah, I like this guy. Just good, no frills wrestler, and have enjoyed him. He's always been a heel for me. Big burly type, a little bit like a Bruno type body type, and just kick ass and take names. He's done very well, and like I mentioned with KO Keller, he's been in that stable with Keller and Morpheus for me for quite some time, and they're always being a thorn in the side of Omega and his family. So Grogan's my if you want to lump polarity together, he's my second favorite character of this whole edition, and has become a favorite in general.
Yeah, he was really tough. I mean, he's got a tough card. I mean, his pin is 7-4, which, you know, back in the day wasn't a death knell, but he's just got a really tough card. His offense is really strong. His defense is very good. He's only got the one down other than the 7-4 pin. I mean, you know, pretty solid. I mean, his agility isn't good, but other than that, I mean, just a really, really solid card.
Yeah. Good power.
Dark Star creature, not so much.
No. Terrible. I'm sure he's green too.
Oh, damn it. Why, Stu? Why does he have to be green? Corey, you were talking about your upsets with the Dark Star mm-hmm. creature. So what other use did you have for him while you were playing?
Oh man, you know, lots. I even as a young promoter, I could see how unique this card was with the out of the rings and everything, and you know, no other charts on all C ratings. you know, part of me was like, oh, he's kind of your preliminary talent, but no, he's just, I mean, not consistently. Like I said, beat Omega when Omega was champ. It was a non-title match, but then that earned him a shot at the belt, which Omega retained after that. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with him. I did a, so when I kind of brought in the 2087 characters, my year-end supercard, I did a battle royal featuring a lot of them and some of the classics talent that was, you know, kind of starting to phase out. And of course, Dark Star Creature won the battle royal because he's got three out of the rings. But that was kind of like his farewell, because then he, you know, he went out on top. And then I did bring him back to my my AFW years later, because it was just kind of a hodgepodge of characters, some that had been in the GWF, some that were kind of, you know, too bold for the GWF. And he won a battle royal there to earn a shot at Terminus and the AFW title. And then I did another time he was in a battle royal, but it was a cage battle royal. And he ended up being second place. I think he got thrown out by Purgatory, or NGO bootleg, Steve's bootleg. So it's like once he lost a battle royal, that was kind of time for him to go again. But yeah, I had a lot of fun with this character, and just a really, really good memories. Grogan as well. So Grogan was my first heavy metal champion. I did a heavy metal title before an interplanetary title, just because I kind of wanted another belt. But, you know, with the smaller set here between the two classics, I just thought, well, something to kind of stand apart a little bit. And I loved that he was heavy metal champ, because I kind of saw him. He wasn't in there to like brawl and throw people into the cage like that. He was just there. The cage was there to kind of determine a winner, you know, a decisive winner, no interference or anything like that. We're going to step inside this cage. So almost like an MMA fighter in a sense, you know, and loved him. I love the artwork for Grogan. He just looks, you know, I think Chad or Tim, you said it's kind of, this is kind of him as a veteran. But he just got this great presence to him. And yeah, just a really revered character in my GWF. Yeah, really enjoyed him. I would bring him back about a year, you know, into the 2087. But again, I wasn't following the game set years. But about a year after he had left, to team up with Massive as kind of like a one-time supercard appearance to help battle some of Massive's rivals. I think it was Bishop Hell and Killer Queen at the time. But he was kind of this legend coming back, and yeah, really love this card. I love the upper crush. You know, it's just a bear hug, but it fit his personality and his wrestling style.
You're right. Yeah. No, I used this a couple of times. I think I brought him in as like a special attraction kind of thing with Massive as well. Mm-hmm. Once or twice. Just thought it was a really cool card. Probably my second favorite in the set between after Polarity. Mm-hmm. But just really good stuff. I really thought the set was great. You know, like I said, the artwork's almost night and day. I mean, looking at that and then what you got, you know, 4 years later. But still, I just really cool. You had the original, as everybody said, kind of that original you know, three-piece gladiator set up on the front of the booklet. That just looked really neat. Just a really good way to kind of go in and delve and fill in all the backstory of this thing that Tom had started. And I thought did a really great job. So there you have it, everyone. Our reviews of the Classics 2084 and Classics 2086 sets for Filsinger Games Champions of the Galaxy. And now it is time for us to wrap some things up and shout some things out. Let us start with Mr. Chad Olson.
All right. Thank you, Tim. First thing I want to address a little something that the gentleman talked about last week, but it's something I've said before, so I'm just going to put my spin on it. The whole crowd goes mild thing, that is poking fun at us. That is not making fun of anybody who's joined the thing. So, you know, that's that, and that's that. I will continue to say it sometimes, and again, it's poking fun at us, not making any fun of anybody who's joined the Legends of Wrestling independent roster, or where indie games, indies, Filsinger indies, champions of the Legends, something, something, something. When we got on our rutabaga counter, our tangent, I started Googling rutabaga, and there's like a whole rutabaga counter culture out there. Lots of like t-shirts about rutabaga, stickers. So, I mean, I think you could find this about any of your favorite vegetables. My favorite is the picture of rutabaga Ginsburg sticker. It's a rutabaga head on a Ruth Ginsburg body, complete with a little doily thing around her neck. So, yeah. For Tim, I wanted to share that at our youth wrestling tournament last Friday night, we had a kid wrestling whose first name was Dockin. And I so wanted to ask him if it rhymes with rockin'.
You have to. How could you not?
I mean, he's just a kid. He didn't know any better. His parents stuck him with that name.
Even if he would have been clueless, it just would have been so funny to you. I mean, you know, that sometimes you just got to do things for yourself.
Oh, it popped me. and then I'd like to thank everybody who took time to comment on episode 159. Kevin West, Kevin the Butcher, The Faction, Pete, Neely Bob 21, DK2, Pete Beck, LA Wraith, Pariah, TTX, and Sinestro 24. Thank you for listening, taking the time to comment, and sharing your thoughts and ideas with us. And let us know next week what you think about rutabagas and what was the biggest upset in your Feds history. Thank you for listening, everybody. Peace out, be safe, and be excellent to each other.
Well, thanks, Chad. And yes, we want all the rutabaga knowledge that you can share with us. Stuart, what's going on with you this week?
I just want to give a shout out to whatever glue the college football playoff committee is sniffing at the moment. It is just absolutely ridiculous that they kept Florida State, whom I have no love for. Let me preface my remarks by saying I cannot stand Florida State, and with apologies to all Florida State alums and fans who are members of this gaming community, I root against you pretty hard. But the fact that they were denied a spot in the college football playoff, come on. I mean, it's just become a beauty contest, or it's reverting back to the way college football was being a beauty contest, saying, well, this is the best team and they're just going to be the champion. It's just ridiculous that Florida State is left out, 13-0 ACC champions. And yes, I'm an ACC homer, so I'm pissed off about that too, but just unbelievable that they got denied being in the playoff. Yes, Chad.
So what's the rationale? Like, is it just that strength of schedule? Because as I'm looking, you know, Texas and Alabama both have a loss.
They have losses. And I would think Florida State should be in over either one of them. Strength of schedule played a factor. I think that they could not stand having a playoff without an SEC team in there.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
It's got to be true. I just think that they bow down to the SEC, so they had to put Alabama in there. I would have gone with Alabama and then FSU over Texas, you could say Texas over Alabama because they beat Alabama. But to just not Texas have Florida did? State in there, oh,
Texas beat Alabama.
They did early in the year.
Well, what the fuck? Yeah, kick Alabama's ass out and put Florida State in there.
I'd be down with that.
Or throw out Texas. I don't give a shit. They're leaving the Big 12. They can. I mean, I was rooting hard for Texas to lose on Saturday.
I bet you were.
Once they destroy the conference system, they can just put in whoever they want.
Right.
That's kind of what's going on. We're going to be down to two conferences anyway at some point. So I just.
And no NCAA.
Well, yeah.
That's going away.
Just sickened me to see that. That's just, I feel so badly for that Florida State team who's overcome a lot of adversity, lost their star quarterback, and still won out. Won three straight games to end the season. So,
amen.
Yep.
Hallelujah.
That's all I got.
What about Liberty? They're 13-0.
They're 13-0.
Give me Liberty or give me death.
There you go. Makes for a good t-shirt.
Give Stu Liberty or give him Florida State. He doesn't care. He just wants those teams in there, for God's sakes.
Put somebody in other than I'm sick of Alabama and not thinking Texas necessarily deserves it either. But you just made a mockery of saying that the games matter. Just don't play the season and put in who you think the four best teams are. End of my rant. Good night, Denmark.
All right, there we go.
I think young I have Mr. an idea Olson for I have an idea for Stewart's wrestling card now.
Oh, my. Oh, my. Young Mr. Olson, Corey, what have you got for us tonight?
Thank you, Tim. Thanks for hosting. And Stu, I was nervous there because you were going so far in your rant. I thought you were going to leave out Denmark. So thank you for remembering Denmark. Got to remember Denmark.
Always.
I want to give attention to the other Filsinger Games content providers out there in the community. Of course, Sam, Mike, and Todd over at Roll Up, the official podcast of Filsinger Games. Grant Pachoco and the Solo Promoter YouTube channel. Steve Tower at After Further Review. Dave Little at Heartland Championship Wrestling. Lee Longpre and the Dizzy Dice Podcast, Brock Atkinson at Brockster Builds, as well as Brock and Mike's Filsinger Games Character Spotlight. Thank you, promoters, for sharing your content with us on a regular basis. And I'll also give some shout-outs to my wrestling team. We had our first meets of the year, as I mentioned. We had a try on Friday night. We won both duels, some pretty close ones overall. We had several wrestlers getting their very first matches, and several of them in those first matches got victories, so really cool to see that. And then Saturday we had a tournament. We had three varsity wrestlers place in the top four, including my son, who's an eighth grader, taking third place in his bracket. It was a smaller bracket for him, five-man bracket, so round robin. Went 2-2 for the day, wrestled a wrestler who's ranked in state in a class bigger than us, but didn't matter. He just gave his best. And several of our girls wrestled as well in girls, all girls matches, all girls brackets. Our girl who went to state last year took first in her bracket, going undefeated for the day. Had two JV wrestlers also take first in their bracket. So very proud of our team. We've got really good numbers this year. We're at 28 as of today. That's 19 boys and 9 girls. We just had another girl join us. So really cool to see that growth among the girls and among the boys as well. So very proud of this team and looking forward to seeing what else they can accomplish this year. And I just want to say, as always, thanks, everybody, for clicking, listening, and downloading. Stu.
You forgot to mention that wasn't your son Jason in a James Jeffries t-shirt?
Thank you. That's right. I was texting these guys as well as the roll-up gang. Yeah, and I didn't even notice that until the team was doing warm-ups right before the tournament started. And, you know, one of our school colors is red. So I didn't really notice, but he was wearing a red t-shirt, but it was not for our school. It was for James Jeffries. And I texted James as well. It was a Party in the USA shirt for James Jeffries, established 2007. And I said something to my son after the fact, and I don't even think it really dawned on him. He just kind of grabbed a red shirt and threw it on for his warmups, but I'm sure that helped him win that day. But yes, thank you, Stu.
How could it not help? I mean, you know,
right.
He did have a problem when he did slice bread number two to that one kid. But I mean, yeah. Other than that, I mean, the tournament went well.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Little mistake.
Yeah. That's minor. You know,
thankfully
he read in a Filsinger handbook that was an Olympic move. So he thought he could go out there and
actually, since this is folk style wrestling and not Olympic style, you stole my thunder, Timmy. Yeah. The back rake was legal and that's what brought him the victory.
Oh, man.
And he used a good high crotch.
Yes.
Well, thanks, Corey. Yes. You know, for me, you know, I kind of went light on the t-shirt promo tonight. Y'all know where to get these things, right? I mean, they don't have the Rutabaga Ginsburg shirt yet, but we got to talk to Justin about that because that could be a seller. But by God, you know, if you want your Uncharted Territory stuff, all you need to do, people, is go to tkostore.com. That's right. TEEKOstore.com. All your Uncharted Territory needs. You got your t-shirts, your sweatshirts, your hoodies. It's getting chilly out there, even in the warm countries and the cities and the towns and the villages and the continents. It's getting chilly. Get your stuff, get warm. And why not plaster our faces on your chest while you're doing it? By God, for a low, low price of whatever the prices are on the website. But you can go there and look at tkostore.com. You know, I've been promising for a couple of weeks that the rant about my dry cleaning issue, which is what I was, before I went to Florida, I knew I'd be going out to a couple of nice restaurants. So I wanted to get some dry cleaning done, get some shirts pressed and that, because I am not good at pressing shirts. Chad's very good. I am not.
Thank you.
So I went to my dry cleaners and there's a notice on the door that the place is open, but there's a notice on the door that Larry, who was the guy that owned the place, had passed away. And I was somewhat saddened to hear that, because even though I didn't know him well, he was a good guy. And we used to chat a little bit when I would bring my stuff in or pick it up. And so I go in there and somebody who looks too young to be his daughter and doesn't look like a nice Polish girl, you know, comes up to me and says, oh, and speaking with a heavy accent that I couldn't quite discern. But apparently she's taking over the operations, although they're taking orders, but they're sending everything out because they can't use the machines and all that stuff of his yet, because that's still up in estate litigation or something. I'm not quite sure what was going on. So I didn't know what to do because I don't know this woman. And I figured, well, I guess I'll leave my shirts with him and just hope for the best. Oh, and she said, fuck. Well, you know, Larry's prices were very cheap. And so she's already hitting me for the price increase. The first time I'm bringing stuff in since Larry passed away, and she's hitting me with, you know, trying to build me up for the price increase. And let me tell you, when I wore suits all the time, I used to get a lot of dry cleaning done at probably 10 different dry cleaners throughout Buffalo over the years. Larry's prices might have been cheap, but they weren't that cheap. So I was just a little upset. And then she comes out and she said, well, when do you want them? And I said, well, I need to pick them up on, you know, by Thursday, because I left myself a leeway day on Friday because I was leaving on Saturday. And she says, okay, I'll call you when they're ready. And I'm thinking to myself, well, that's odd. Usually you just come in and pick them up on the day they say they'll be ready. So I said, do you have my phone number? Oh no, I need your phone number. So already I'm worried about this place. However, they did have my stuff. They did send it out and get it back from whoever did the dry cleaning. I'll probably be using now because I don't want to go back to them. But just what the hell? I mean, what is, have your ducks in a row before you freaking open for business again. What the hell was going on with you people? You know, and don't, when I walk in, don't immediately hit me with the, oh, his prices were too cheap. Don't hit me with the price increase until after you get my business. You're going to lose naturally. Anytime there's turnover in business, you're going to lose customers because there's a relationship thing that goes with the business. And you're going to lose people that that loved Larry and knew him well. And now they don't know you. So they're not going to go to, you know, get their dry cleaning done with you. You're going to lose that immediately. So don't hit me with the freaking price increase when I walk in the door the first time because you think his prices were cheap, which they weren't. It's just, what the hell is going on in the world, man?
Here's a question.
I mean, you can't even get your shirts pressed for a decent price question. Anymore. Yes.
Do you think maybe Larry, they couldn't afford a burial? They couldn't afford cremation.
Oh, I don't know where this. Oh, I hate where this is going.
Maybe they really just pressed him, and they're having to get the gunk off the machine.
That would be too bad. I mean, you know, you
think he was heavily starched or lightly starched?
Yeah.
I'm going to go heavy.
I did ask what happened when I went in, because I didn't read. There was the whole obit from the Buffalo News was on the door, but I didn't read it. And I said, well, what was wrong? And she said, oh, he had a ruptured. And so I'm like, okay, now I've got to play guessing games with internal organs.
Giblet. I'm like, ruptured giblet.
And I said, spleen? And she, yes, spleen.
Yeah, sure.
I don't think it was a spleen.
That works.
Yeah, it could have been anything. He just could have had a hangnail that got infected. I don't know what the hell happened.
Maybe he tripped and fell into his machine.
He may have.
And got steamed.
Maybe it was the wife. Who knows?
Oh.
It's always the wife in these murder mysteries.
I mean, most of the time, if people get murdered, it's by their spouse.
There you go. There you go. So that's why I'm never going to get murdered. I'm going to get murdered by like probably 100 other people because I don't have a spouse.
Your friends' spouses.
We have a list.
Yeah. It's going to be tough to narrow it down.
Emily was ready to kill Troy at the Hall of Fame show.
No, well, there you go.
When she had him taking cash for
Superstar
and Tommy Rich. And Troy said, you know, I'm an acquired taste. It takes about 40 years to get used to me.
No, but that's so that's the dry cleaning rant. I'm like, you're running business away before you even get the business back. I mean, what the hell? I just don't understand people.
It's an interesting business.
So I'm in the so if anybody knows a good dry cleaner in Buffalo, let me know. I know there's some Western New Yorkers on the board, so maybe that'll help me out.
There you go.
But that's all I got. I just want to thank everybody for listening. We really do appreciate it. Like I said, 160 episodes, who would have thought, you know, when we just kind of did this getting together but by God, we're still going with our tens and tens of listeners. So it's it's just a pleasure coming to you guys and have, you know, getting together with us, ourselves, and just kind of talking, and then you know, seeing your reactions every week. So thank you very much. And we will be back next time with episode 161.
Hey promoters, it's Corey again, and we would love to hear from you. Please send us your questions, topic suggestions, or any other comments, and we might include your audio in a future episode of Uncharted Territory. There's two ways you can do it. You can go to tinyurl.com/UNCTER. Again, tinyurl.com/UNCTER. You can click the message button and record up to a 1-minute message, and we can include that in a future episode. Or you can email us either audio or a written question at our email address, utpodcast2020@gmail.com. Again, utpodcast2020@gmail.com.
Want to show your friends that you listen to Uncharted Territory? Well, head on over to our store at tkostore.com/collection/uncharted-territory. You can choose from a shirt or hoodie with Travis Heckel's great podcast cover artwork, or a shirt with a design inspired by one of our favorite bands. While there, check out the other great merchandise at TKO, including shirts of several of the top MMA fighters, including Bigfoot Silva, Tim Sylvia, Ensign Inoue, and more. Need a shirt made for your event or organization? Contact TKO, run by Filsinger Games promoter Justin Bulka, aka Pike Mojo, to place your order. Again, that's tkostore.com, TEEKOstore.com.
Insert wolf music.
Liking that haircut, brother.
Thank you.
And tight.
Thank you. Much easier to care for in the mornings.
Getting it done. Right,
yep.
There.
No time to fart around with a comb.
I've said that for years.
I threw all my combs away.
I don't think I own a comb anymore.
Like the newspaper ticker. That noise there, I just did it. You don't have to do it, you lazy.
Well, no, I'll just take your part out, and that you just did an Easter egg.
Ah, no, that was a good one. I called dibs on hosting episode 169.
Of course.
All yours.
Oh yeah,
I thought that was already in the
book. That's automatic.
I just wanted to say that.
Mm-hmm.